Good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to another episode of the Daily Friend Show. I'm your host, Nicholas Larimer, today joined by Chris Hutton. Chris, how are you doing?
Hi, Nick. John, doing well, thank you. Hope you all had a good weekend. Quite a bit for us to make sense of, I think. The GNU's future, I think, hangs in the balance. So it's a great start to 2025.
Indeed, and we will be talking about the Government of National Unity and the expropriation bill and its fallout in the episode today. I'm also joined today by John Endres. John, how are you doing?
Good, and not bored, which I think is like a constant state for us in South Africa, is not being bored. There's always something interesting going on, and today is no
Indeed. Although whether that's a good or a bad thing, sometimes I prefer a little bit of boredom. But anyway, before we get into the meat of the news stories today, let me just quickly give you a word from our sponsor, Hideco Energy. Hideco Energy says, are you tired of skyrocketing electricity bills and the new phenomenon of load reduction? Meet Hideco Energy, South Africa's trusted tier one premium solar and backup power solution supplier. With over 100 years of trading experience and the backing of a publicly listed company, Hideco Energy brings you the best quality international products to power your home or business reliably, from 3-kilowatt single-phase systems to 250-kilowatt three-phase solutions. We've got options for every need. And here's the best part. We offer unbeatable financing and rent-to-own packages designed to lower the barriers to saving money, cutting electricity costs, and ensuring power stability regardless of what's happening at Eskom. Right now, they're thrilled to offer Daily Friend listeners an exclusive promotion. Book a free business or household audit, and they will show you how to put money back in your pocket without hefty upfront costs. Reach out to them via email at sales@hidecoenergy.co.za or call them on 011-447-9864. Hideco Energy, sustainable power and storage solutions provider. So let me just give a little summary of reactions to the president's signing of the expropriation bill from various political parties who form part of the Government of National Unity. The DA's leader, John Steenhuisen, gave a speech on Saturday where he laid out a number of things, but he said that his party was declaring a formal dispute within the mechanisms of the Government of National Unity with regards to being what they say is essentially ignored and disregarded when it comes to the signing of this bill into law. Steenhuisen said that the minister into whose portfolio the expropriation bill would fall is the DA's Dean McPherson, and that he was not even told ahead of time that the law had been signed into action. In fact, he found out through the media, the same as everyone else. The IFP said that it rejects the decision of the president to sign the expropriation bill into law. This decision undermines the spirit of consensus and collaboration that is fundamental to the Government of National Unity's framework. The IFP stands resolute in its commitment to opposing this act through all available avenues. The Freedom Front Plus also attacked it, saying the president did not consult with the Government of National Unity before signing the law. The Freedom Front Plus is convinced that this is unconstitutional and will seriously jeopardize South Africa's economy and stability. And interestingly, the Patriotic Alliance's Gayton McKenzie attacked Ramaphosa in very aggressive terms, saying that Ramaphosa had, quote, stabbed us in the back after not informing the Government of National Unity leaders before signing the act into law. He said that President Ramaphosa disrespected us. There is no way to treat us. He didn't have the courtesy to call us, to call the DA, to call the IFP, to call the PA. Those that are scared to tell him, I am here to tell you that you will never treat me like that. I am not desperate to be the Minister of Sports, Arts and Culture. You can remove me tomorrow. So the DA has said that it is basically planning to sort of begin attacking the ANC very aggressively from within government. In fact, anonymous sources in the DA speaking to City Press over the weekend said that they were going to attack the ANC so aggressively at the next cabinet, Lekgotla, that they believe that the ANC may even want to fire their ministers after this, following the cabinet, Lekgotla. President Ramaphosa also seemed to sort of rub salt in the wound when he recently said, even in the GNU, we have a clear obligation and task to implement the policies and decisions and measures that seek to advance the national democratic revolution, and more importantly, to advance the interests of our people through various decisions that we have taken, that we are taking, and that we will continue to take, be they related to education, be they related to health, be they related to the issue of land. ANC members in cabinet are going to be attacked by the DA, according to the DA, on issues such as National Health Insurance Expropriation Act, trade and industries competition localization policy, and another thing that Steenhuisen brought up at in his speech was that the president had refused to even meet with Steenhuisen over to have a discussion about a possible compromise on the national health insurance. In fact, Steenhuisen was simply referred to the health ministry, who also basically ignored him. There's been increasing tension within the GNU in public statements after DA Minister Dean McPherson said that there will be no expropriation of private property without compensation on my watch. His deputy, who is from the ANC, Sihle Zikalala, said, "We are ready to defend the Expropriation Act and ensure its timely implementation." Paul Mashatile said that McPherson was welcome to resign if he didn't want to implement the act. And McPherson said that he would only resign if his party leader asks him to do so. Deputy Minister of Trade and Industry, who's the DA's Andrew Whitfield, said that when it came to the BEE investment fund, which was recently discussed on this show, that usual departmental processes were not followed, and he wasn't informed about it once again until it became knowledge in the media, despite the fact he's the deputy minister. A DA source told City Press, "We can't just walk out of government because then we throw the economy and our voters to wolves. We will continue to fight. I expect that it will eventually lead to the ANC kicking us out of government within the next few months." This is quite interesting to me, John, because it really seems as though the DA is going for an interesting strategy here, one that I actually don't think I've heard talked about a lot with regards to the Government of National Unity. The DA obviously doesn't want to leave the Government of National Unity because they're afraid the ANC will invite the MK and EFF party into government. But at the same time, they can't stand for what seems to be basically flagrant disregard of any of the principles upon which the GNU was founded. So it looks to me like their strategy is to get the ANC to throw them out of the Government of National Unity, which I think is actually might be quite a clever political strategy in a way. I don't know. What do you make of this?
Yeah, so I think firstly, I'd like to give a shout out to our live viewers. It's always great to see you all there and see your comments in the chat. Keep it up. Really cool. On the GNU and our current situation, I read between the lines that what preceded the events of the last week was probably a decision within the ANC that got a bit fed up with this GNU nonsense and having to compromise with other people on your own policies and priorities, and said, well, you know, actually, we can do it ourselves. We can lead a minority government. We don't really need these guys. But it's going to look bad if we kick them out. So rather get them to leave and get them to take the blame for scuppering this national project of national unity. And the way to do that is through calculated insults. So, you know, you just sign laws without telling anybody about it, launch initiatives without telling the relevant ministers about it, be sort of quite dismissive of your counterparts from the other parties, get their hackles up, and try to push it to a point where they end up leaving because they're so annoyed. And look made to look bad as a result of that. And to some extent, I think that the DA has understood that strategy and is countering it. And now really the objective of the ANC and the DA is to get the other one to push them out and sort of to make sure that the blame gets apportioned to the counterpart and that the, you know, there's one responsible party that is statesmanlike, acting in the interests of the country, respectful of the priorities of the nation, and a partner who is disrespectful. And that is really about getting the dominance and the interpretation of what's going on. I also think that the DA has sort of allowed things in a way to come to this point because it has been tested a few times by the ANC over Bela, for example, of NHI, and has always been quite willing to compromise, accommodate the ANC. And I think the ANC sort of has watched this for a while and said, okay, these guys are no threat. They're really harmless. You can do what you like with them. They'll suck it all up. And so for the DA to counter that, they basically have two options. And the one is to leave, to step out and say, you know, actually, we don't have to take this anymore. We're gone. Good luck with the MK or the EFF or however you want to do it. And the second option is to do what they are doing now, which is to demonstrate assertiveness while remaining inside the GNU, which I think is quite tough to do, because you have to cooperate while opposing your partner. But I think it's necessary. So we saw a bit of that strategy being revealed in Steenhuisen's statement. And I think if the DA gets into some shouting matches in the cabinet Lekgotla with their ANC counterparts, that is going to help sort of establish some rules about the relationship. But yeah, it's a really interesting time. It's, I think, a lot more relaxing for us watching from the outside than for the people actually involved, having to make these decisions and figure out how they are going to justify their place in government in the face of quite a lot of challenges. Nick?
So I get the impression that the DA is very, you know, I was in the DA years ago, and so I get the impression always that the DA is very attached to its identity as the party that does things by the book, that is the responsible party, the negotiator, the ones who are willing to compromise, and it really gets up there. They're sort of really worried as being seen as obstructionist and unfair and malevolent. So I think that had that the fear of losing that sort of impression of themselves has been part of what's caused them to, I think, as you say, you know, play ball with the ANC, even when from the very beginning, I think the ANC decided to play hardball with the DA. And I think that came right from the moment of the cabinet being announced, where there was suddenly this vastly expanded cabinet and every DA minister was always shadowed by an ANC deputy minister. And that, to me, was one of the first signs that there was like a lot of bad faith in this agreement. Steenhuisen, in his speech, did say that he thought things were basically going fine initially because Ramaphosa had agreed to have some sort of negotiation on the Bella Bill. Of course, that didn't seem to go anywhere. I think that's actually not the place where things went wrong was during the Bella Bill. I think it was actually kind of right from the beginning. Chris, what do you make of all this? I mean, it kind of seems a little bit now like the GNU is not really a government of national unity. It is going to be a government of national disunity, and that, as John says, the two sides are going to simply be using it as another platform which to attack each other, much like how Parliament was used in the past.
Yeah, so I think a big consideration for the DA is if you choose to remain in the GNU, despite what the ANC has done, on what terms do you do so and how do you enforce those and leverage what positions you do have? So it's not to say that the DA doesn't have leverage, but you know, it's a bit like a muscle. If you don't exercise it, then it's ultimately meaningless. It won't, you know, you can say you have leverage, but you need to show it and you need to practice it. So we've seen the public statements and now we'll see what happens in this extended cabinet meeting starting on Wednesday, what comes out of that. I do also understand the argument of, you know, you've got a Liberal Party in cabinet for the first time, you know, since 1994 and arguably before that as well. So now what do you sacrifice in terms of the way you do things? What do you take from a party like the ANC to still retain that sort of influence within that most powerful body within government? Just on the ANC, I think there might be a few other factors to consider as well. So number one, the rejigging or disbandment of the party's provincial structures in Gauteng and KZN and the internal power plays on the go at the moment. I read into what is going on right now that President Ramaphosa and others closer to him are trying to signal to those in the party who, for example, want to go to MK that they are still in charge, that they can run the GNU well, and that they'll continue to implement their ideas and policies. Now, they're not considering the wider implications. And of course, if this leads to the breaking up of the GNU and they're a minority government, they're going to be subject to votes of no confidence and all of that sort of thing, you know, not on a daily basis, but maybe a weekly or monthly basis. But I think the internal power struggle for the ANC is also really factoring in to what we're seeing play out publicly. In around, let's say, almost 2 years and 10 months, President Ramaphosa is very likely not to be ANC leader anymore. There are very few opportunities for him to leave the party in a position he wants and for those closer to him to try and influence support within the party and maybe undecided voters as to which way they would go. I'm referring, of course, to the next ANC elective conference scheduled for 2027. So, yeah, I'm,
I think the AMC isn't maybe considering the wider implications of what they're doing, but I do think internal power struggles are really coming to the fore.
Now, I think the ANC is kind of completely consumed in a lot of ways with its own internal world the unity of the ANC has been the overriding goal of the ANC since 2008, basically. And you think about Ramaphosa, his entire time in the senior levels of the ANC over the last decade has been consumed with this question. So it's not surprising to me that the supposed unity of the ANC is being prioritized over any sort of governance concerns whatsoever. Something that, when I'm talking about kind of bad faith discussions on this, I see what Fikile Mbalula, the ANC Secretary General, has just tweeted about the invoking of Clause 19 in the Statement of Intent by the DA. He's trying a sort of technical legalistic defense, saying Clause 19 does not apply to bills that have already been passed. It only applies to bills that are proposed, drafted by ministers or deputy ministers. Clause 19 would not include bills that come from parliamentary committee or individual members of parliament. Clause 19 does not make provision for the reset of all bills parties in the GNU do not agree with. That would be unlawful. The president may remit a bill if there is a constitutional concern. There aren't any at this point. The DA's problem with the act is it's a specific clause that empowers the state to appropriate instances to expropriate subject to nil compensation. It's funny to think of that. That has no problem with the constitution. But anyway, John, what do you make of this? I mean, look, sorry, just before I get to you, DA doesn't like listening to people on the sidelines. But I will say that I really do think that it's time for them to really push the limits of what they can do in Parliament. Don't vote for the budget if it's not something that you can completely get behind. And business will probably tell the DA, no, you have to vote for the budget whilst there's all these financial concerns. Well, then put the blame at the face of the ANC. They're the ones who don't want to play ball here. Don't support the ANC in cabinet. Criticize government from cabinet. Make appointments as exercise the full range of your ministerial powers. I think it's time to play some hardball because the ANC does not seem to me to be particularly interested whatsoever in keeping this thing together. John, as you say, a lot of this seems almost deliberate. We know that from its past behavior, the ANC likes to move forward when it thinks that there's no real opposition, and it only retreats when it faces strong opposition.
Yeah, what do you mean? Agree with that. Yeah, I think if the DA doesn't leave, then it does have to play hardball. That's the very least it can do. It cannot afford to do nothing. It has to now, show some spine. But I would also add that the ANC, I think, is playing its hand well. It's placing party above country very clearly. It's going against the growth objective, which we at the IRR keep pushing, which the ANC pays lip service to, but obviously doesn't really mean. And I think if you're putting party above country, then this ploy isn't bad because you're sort of weakening the DA, putting them in the position of having to make really tough decisions. You're outflanking EFF, you're outflanking MK, you're looking like you're in charge, you're in command of the situation. So from the ANC's perspective, I think they're riding pretty high, really not looking bad. But for everybody else, it's a bit of a mess. Nick?
No, I think that's exactly right. But let's move on to some other stories and sort of the impression I'm getting from all of this. So I'm just going to take two together quickly because they're quite similar to each other. We talked last week about ArcelorMittal shutting down parts of its operation, and it's believed that this could cause 3,500 direct jobs to be lost and another 25,000 jobs in the steel value chain could be at risk from ArcelorMittal shutting down these things. There's been much work behind the scenes in the Department of Trade and Industry where Minister Parkstau and some of the ANC believe that the solution here is to bail out ArcelorMittal, which has been in an unhealthy financial position for a little while. They believe that they can find a 1 billion rand bailout that would help to save some of these jobs. A source speaking to the media said that they thought there was a good idea to bail out ArcelorMittal, but they were also concerned that ArcelorMittal might just come back and ask them for more money later, complaining that even when they were making profits, they were not investing in upgrading the plants. If we do all these things, what guarantee do we have the next year. They're not going to come and say, give us more. At the same time, the ANC's Economic Transformation Committee is talking about a massive, massive bailout or subsidy to Transnet to try and fix its numerous problems. And there's been some reports that Transnet would need something like 70 billion rand in order to upgrade the rail infrastructure and get it sort of back to scratch. The ANC's internal committee said that there was an urgent need for interventions and solutions to sustain the local steel industry and Transnet. They need some. One of their committee deputy chair of the committee, ANC member, said we need something massive for Transnet. And one of the concerns here was that because Transnet is so indebted, that if you don't give them a big enough amount of money, they will just fall back into debt because they struggle so much to raise capital due to their poor financials. This ANC member said, if you give Transnet 47 billion rand, you are not helping them to solve the large-scale capital requirements they have at a structural level. It's still far less than what they require. We should give them a comprehensive one-off. So let's just briefly talk about whether this is a good idea. Chris, constant bailouts, tariffs to try and protect the steel industry, none of this works, and none of it has worked. What do you make of the story?
Look, I'm all for a department of government efficiency that collates all bailouts and subsidies into one. But of course, I'm being facetious there. Look, you can throw, let's assume that the state had this sort of money. Let's assume we had 500 billion for Transnet, for ArcelorMittal, for Eskom to deal with all their various debt commitments. That really doesn't fix the underlying issues in those three companies, number one. But number two, in the wider policy space that afflicts those different sectors. So, for example, Transnet in terms of logistics, if you've got the policy direction of travel where Transnet maintains an effective monopoly, I know there are notes towards bringing in private sector participation, but the private sector won't have responsibility for actually owning infrastructure, for example. You've just got overtures towards private sector participation and competition, not a real reform in terms of the policy. This cycle will continue repeating itself, and the government will be in the position of having to pick winners and losers. And inevitably, it will be those state-owned companies or indeed private companies that have the most developed political connections and who have the deepest pockets in terms of dealing with various forms of compliance and ticking boxes and making sure that they should get the bailouts because they quote-unquote give the most to the economy, the most socially responsible, all those sorts of things. So, yeah, I think deeply reckless from a fiscal point of view, and Treasury, the Reserve Bank, some of our institutions have done such a good job shoring up where they can South Africa's the view of our fiscal responsibility, trying to bring down our debt burden. Now, again, you push from other from government and from the other department side, you just keep pushing that envelope. And I don't think it fixes anything fundamentally. So maybe it'll happen. It'll help Transnet. It won't help bring about real economic growth, won't help established or emerging players in different sectors in mining, agriculture, any of that. So I think it's indicative of not wanting to acknowledge the deeper philosophical and structural policy issues that afflict these sectors.
John, your thoughts?
Yeah, I would say look out for the pattern. Like there's a pattern that you can see in all of this, which is whenever there's a problem, throw money at it to make the problem go away. And it doesn't work. So you'll remember Gabriel's paper on slashing waste and cutting taxes, where he did the study and he showed that the South African state's quality of performance goes down like that over time, last 30 years, and the size of the state goes up like that. And what this means is that the more money you give to the state, the worse the results you get. So why give it more money? This constant call for bailouts and funds and transformation funds and support and subsidies is really not a very good approach. But we're also seeing a lack, I think, of alternative ideas out of the ANC. It's always the same approach. So it's favoritism, it's clientelism. And you say, like, my favorite is the steel industry. So we're going to give them some tariff protection. Then if they fall over, I'm going to give them a bailout. You sort of try to pick the people you want to support, but it creates huge distortions, and those distortions have secondary effects that you don't like, so you introduce some more distortions. And ultimately, you end up with a very dysfunctional economy that is very uncompetitive. Nick?
So I want to pick up on that point specifically in talking about the next story, which is that Ramaphosa, speaking to the party, announced that he was ordering the ANC to fix local municipalities ahead of 2026, and that he was ordering the party to repair its branches and make them vibrant centers of the community, as I believe the phrase he uses. The ANC has lost the trust of our people, and urgent and focused action is required to gain that trust. And John, I think here is the bottom line. The ANC seems to be sabotaging the GNU now, quite fundamentally, you know, just sort of spitting in its face, saying we can do it, we like, do what we like. We haven't lost anything. We're still in power. We, in fact, are going full steam ahead on the National Democratic Revolution. But they don't have any alternative to the GNU, really. Everything they've tried in terms of the National Democratic Revolution has failed. It's only, you know, that's been ANC policy for decades since they came to power. And since 2008 in particular, it's really driven the country down. Unemployment is up, crime is up. Almost every measure you can see around you, the country has suffered over the last decade. And then, as you say, when it comes to solutions, the solution is always just, let's just squeeze the private sector harder for more money to just throw at it. And then we'll just order everything to be done properly. The ANC has no idea how to get out of this hole. Doesn't have any kind of positive action, really, it seems, to actually climb out of here, except to triple down on the expropriation stuff. And when that fails, it will undoubtedly say, well, it's simply because we didn't squeeze the private sector hard enough. This is a party that seems completely adrift. What do you make of this?
Yeah, I think that's right. There's a certain aspect of cargo culture to this. So it used to be that in remote Pacific islands, planes would come and drop cargo, like supplies or relief supplies, something like that. And then when the planes stopped coming, people would make sort of facsimile airplanes out of sticks and straw in the hopes that this would attract the planes to come back, because it's sort of the same shape generally. It looks like the right thing. So it should kind of work to, you know, produce the cargo, but it doesn't, because the underlying mechanisms aren't understood. And that is what we're seeing here with the ANC. You sort of say, you know, make the municipalities whole, let the state-owned enterprises walk again. But it's all magical thinking. It's not really linked to reality. When Chris and I do briefings, one of the things we point out is that you can assess policy on the basis of whether it is pragmatic and evidence-based, or whether it is ideological and disconnected from reality. And that really is an important factor of whether your policy is going to be successful or not. And if you've got this fact-free, evidence-free, ideological policymaking, you don't get the results that you want or that you expect. And that is pretty much the road that the ANC is going down. Nick?
Chris, your thoughts?
For such a deeply unserious statement and quote-unquote solution by the president, I only have this to offer. If you could order the municipalities to work now, why couldn't you just order them to work beforehand?
No, exactly. That is, they don't have any idea. At least, you know, say what you will about the EFF, but they had a completely warped, twisted vision for South Africa that I think they could make the argument, although I'd argue that, you know, a lot of EFF policy was basically just ANC policy taken to its logical conclusion, but at least they could claim that they were sort of doing something new. We've seen all this before. The ANC just keeps doing the same thing again and again, just upping the stakes every time. Oh, we're taking away mineral rights, or we're taking away water rights. Why now we're taking away all of land too? Well, why not? And then next it'll be something else. It'll be people's pensions. It'll be some other assets that the people of this country own. And, you know, we're sitting at 40% unemployment. We're sitting at hundreds of children not able to get the food that they need. We're sitting at enormous levels of crime, 70 people murdered a day, somewhere around there. It's a party that is going to drive itself into the dustbin of history, to use a Marxist phrase, I think, because when you are going down as the saying goes, if something can't continue forever, it won't. And I think it's in the ANC's own self-interest, never mind the country's self-interest, to change the direction that they're going in, because they are going to drive themselves into the mud and take the country with it. John, any final thoughts?
Yeah, maybe just this one sort of slightly optimistic idea, which is that being confronted repeatedly...
that would be very welcome.
being confronted repeatedly with the failures of your own policies to bring about the results that you're looking for. At some stage, you know, people in the ANC are going to get a little puzzled about why is this happening? Why does reality hate us so much? And that is the point when they, you know, got to look for solutions outside the party. And that's where the IRR stands ready with our blueprint for growth papers. You know, so you don't necessarily need to know all the answers, but you can look up the answers. And we're writing them down for people to read, communicating them. And yeah, the solutions are sort of clear. It's clear how to get it done. You just got to do it.
Just on that point, and this is a case we've made over the years, which is that the ANC, especially between sort of during Mbeki's presidency, between 2000 and 2007, it made a lot of mistakes in government. Don't get us wrong. The racial affirmative action, the labor laws, the HIV/AIDS denialism, those are all bad. But it got enough right to grow the economy. And we benefited from the global tide of the commodities boom. We saw unemployment go down. And so the ANC has actually managed to do better than this. It just decided that everything it did right previously, it was going to ignore. Any final thoughts, John, on that one?
No, I agree with you on that. Like, if there's one thing you can't get wrong that you have to get right, it is to make the economy grow. You can get quite a lot of other things wrong, but you've got to make the economy grow. You can't get past that. So that's what's got to be the focus.
Exactly. And to finish with an optimistic note, it was exactly the fact that it has been done correctly in South Africa before, at least more correctly than it is now, that shows that we could do it correctly again. This is not an inevitable slide into oblivion. The right decisions made now could turn things around, and it's important for us as the public to pressure civil society, government, political parties, everyone, as much as possible to make the right choices. Okay, thank you very much, everyone. We hope you've enjoyed the show today. And we will, of course, be back tomorrow with the Daily Friend Show. Cheers, everyone, and have a wonderful day.